This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson.
Eleanor Rigby picks up the rice in the church where a wedding has been.
Take it from John Lennon and Paul McCartney. Being all alone can be a real drag. For the most popular pop band ever, the Beatles sure could record some bleak stuff. Eleanor Rigby is a hard look at the lives of two people who work in a church and have nobody to come home to. And there's something strangely unsympathetic about the song. Paul's line, "Where do they all belong?" hints that maybe lonely people like this could be sent somewhere where we don't have to worry about them. But not everybody thinks that being alone is a curse. In fact, some of the people we'll hear from over the next hour require solitude to create their best work. Today in Studio 360, we're talking about being alone, its pleasures as well as its hazards. Joining me is the writer Jonathan Lethem. He won huge acclaim a few years ago for Motherless Brooklyn, and his most recent novel is The Fortress of Solitude, about a boy growing up as the only white kid on his block of 1970s Brooklyn. He also has a collection of essays out right now. Jonathan Lethem, welcome to Studio 360.
Hi, Kurt. Thanks for having me.
Now, you called your most recent novel The Fortress of Solitude after Superman's hideout up near the North Pole.
Yeah.
How come?
Well, I always was sort of fascinated and amused by the idea of The Fortress of Solitude because here's Superman, who's sort of the most popular guy in the world, and he needs this place up in the Arctic to go and sort of lick his wounds and brood and walk the hallways of this giant empty fortress and talk to himself, which is what he does up there. And the fact that even Superman kind of needed to sulk a lot and needed to have this special place to go and do it struck me as revealing of something incredibly petulant and, I guess, self-pitying in the image of the superhero and of course, the image of the teenager who adores a superhero.
Now, your novel, Fortress of Solitude, seems autobiographical. How was your life as a boy like or different than the hero, your hero Dylan's?
Well, I mean, it's interesting that you ask that question in this framework of solitude because the biggest differences across the board are that I increased the isolation of the character. You know, he's a single son of being raised by a single father. I was actually, you know, I grew up in a family with siblings and I had a mom much later into my childhood than the main character of the book. So I've reduced his options for contact.
Dylan lost his mother as a, I think, 10-year-old in your book. You lost your mother much later. Did that, however, become a kind of the transformative event of your young adulthood?
Well, my first few novels all center around some enormous missing piece, whether it's language or you know, there's a kind of amnesiac loss of memory that's a condition that the characters suffer. And as I worked on my fourth and fifth novels, I realized I was moving closer and closer to writing about a personal condition of losing a parent. But I'm not sorry in a way that I circled around that main subject for so long, because I think what matters to me about my own loss, paradoxically, is that it's connected to universal feelings of, you know, disconnection or suffering, and that in a funny way, I was handed this enormous subject matter.
Uh-huh.
My mother died of cancer slowly while I was turning 11, 12, 13, and 14 when she finally died, same year I began high school. But in some way, I think experiencing that loss only increased a pre-existing feeling for a condition of having lost something. Growing up in New York in the 1970s, I was very sensitive to the feeling that the world itself had suffered some kind of fundamental displacement or loss. My parents, who were radicals, had grown up protesting in the civil rights era and then protesting the Vietnam War. And even though both of those battles had been won in some sense, there was something in the mid-70s that felt very much like a kind of loss of possibilities mm-hmm. for the counterculture. And I was so sensitive to this idea that great things fell apart that I think when my own family fell apart because of my mother's illness and then death, it seemed to me only the natural course of things.